Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Clinical child psychologist Dr. David Coleman joins me now to answer your parenting questions. Good to have you back with us, David.
Good morning, Claire.
Now, people can still get in touch. 51551 is the text number, or WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32. So now, David, let's get straight to it because we have an awful lot of questions coming into us this morning.
As ever.
As we always do. This one from a parent of a daughter who's 8 and has an extreme fear of losing her teeth. One tooth has been loose for over a year. 3 are loose right now. She won't eat or drink. She keeps crying. Her first tooth hurt when it was coming out because the dog knocked against her. So that's offered as maybe a reason or an explanation as to why this might be going on. But have you any advice?
Yes, I mean, I think it's just really hard. You know, it may have been that that first tooth coming out was traumatic with a small key, you know, for her. You know, maybe there was a bit of pain, maybe the shock of it all. And so it sounds like she's now associated all of that kind of distress with her teeth being loose and the potential for another tooth to come out. So I think it's, you know, as with all things related to anxiety or fears, you know, you start with empathy. So you're letting her know that you can understand her fear. So you're using empathy statements. You know, you look like you're really worried about your tooth. Oh, I think you're kind of frightened about your teeth being loose. Maybe you're afraid it's going to be sore if it comes out. And I think once you can validate her feelings in the first step, then I think it just allows her to be, I suppose, a little bit more open. It might actually allow her then to just, I suppose, yeah, maybe start to process and consider a little bit more about these teeth coming up because they're going to come out. Mm-hmm. And I think you can do a little bit of gentle exploration after you've offered some empathy. So you might check in with her about what she thinks might happen if another tooth falls out. You know, you might inquire about her about, you know, what's her sense of the pain that might be involved or what is it about it, you know, because it could be that, you know, maybe there's all this blood in her mouth or whatever. And then, you know, I mean, it's so difficult because her teeth are going to come out, you know. And I think it's about trying to give her though some sense of control about it. So, you know, you could even say to her, you know, well, do you want to wiggle it with your tongue? Or do you want to just check your teeth every day? And then I think it's about, trying to introduce some kind of gradual exposure for her, you know, so yeah, might be role playing it with a doll about, you know, the doll losing her tooth, but then she's okay again afterwards. And so all of that kind of stuff, it's all about being playful and light. You know, you're not kind of rushing her into, you know, we're going to have to get these teeth pulled because the sooner we get them pulled, then you stop worrying about them. You know, that would be kind of frightening. And if it is the case that she's really not eating or drinking, you know, maybe just adapt for the time being, you know, see, can you introduce things like smoothies, soups, you know, mashed potato, anything that won't involve stuff, you know, having to do a lot of biting so that these teeth might come out.
Okay, David, this is one, and I think this might be one that affects a lot of people or people will be interested in hearing the answer to. What age do you talk to your child, this child in particular is 7, about their autism diagnosis, and what do you say to their younger siblings too? And I suppose people might be wondering, if they get a diagnosis like that in the house, do you talk about it a lot, or how do you approach it?
So I think it's going to vary for lots of different households. And, you know, so much of that is going to be based on their individual child and your sense of their readiness. So there are lots of parents who want to just introduce the concept early so that it's just part of what's always known for a child about themselves. Other people might choose to wait until their child shows some kind of curiosity or starts asking questions or perhaps notices differences between themselves and some of their peers. And, you know, I guess for some parents that they don't want to wait until that point because they may fear that if their child is noting differences that it's going to be in a negative way, and they want their child maybe to, you know, kind of have their best foot forward when it comes to recognizing that they might think differently or, you know, understand the world a little bit differently. So that's one element. So you're looking at their readiness, you know, do they have that kind of self-awareness? In terms of their age, you know, younger children are going to struggle with kind of really abstract concepts. You know, they're going to need something that's a little bit more concrete, that it's much more focused on, you know, what is different about them or about other children in terms of how they're thinking or how they understand something. But I think that's what makes autism difficult to talk about with younger children. And again, one of the reasons why some parents wait until their children are that little bit older. So you're talking about the idea of difference. I mean, you know, autism really in terms of neurodiversity, that's another word that you can bring in. You're looking to make sure that when you do start talking about it, that you are bringing that kind of positive explanation in, as opposed to it all being about, you know, some kind of deficit, because, you know, that's definitely not the case for autism. And maybe just, you know, introduce it gradually if you're going to introduce it at all. You know, allow your child to just kind of make sense of the small bits, see if that, you know, brings them to ask more questions, because I think it's always easier, you know, to respond to a child's curiosity. And certainly if your child is asking questions, I'd try and be as truthful as you can. I don't see any reason why you wouldn't be truthful.
This next one is from an Irish listener who's living in France since last summer, but I think this might be a common query or question that people might have here. So our children, they say, are age 6 and 8. They're due to go on a long school tour for 4 days and 3 nights. And it's very common for French schools to do this, but very alien for an Irish mum. And her instinct says that they're too young for a trip like this. Mm. And she'd like to know, how does she balance her personal fears while also allowing them to integrate and participate? Now, Irish schools probably don't, at that young age, take them away for that length of time, but it might happen through sports clubs or other activities. So 6 and 8 away for 3 nights and 4 days, David.
Yeah, I'd say that's almost entirely alien to all. I don't know of any schools that would do any extended breaks like that at that age, nor even sports clubs. I think if there is some kind of a trip, I think parents tend to travel if their children are only 6 and 8. Yeah, absolutely. So that's a very European thing, obviously. To my mind, that would be probably too young. I think that's really, you know, that's going to be challenging for kids to cope with, just the natural separation that they might feel, the anxiety that'll come with that, the homesickness and so on. So, you know, I think for that mum, maybe, you know, she needs to, I suppose, focus on her own instinct and go, you know, look, this just doesn't seem to work for me yet. And I'm going to wait until they're that little bit older. And, you know, because I think there are lots of other opportunities for your child to integrate and to participate other than a school tour, you know, so you can assume that if they're over, I mean, they're not there that long. So, you know, I'd say the whole school system is probably so new and novel for them that they're probably coping with a lot in terms of the language and everything else. So I think maybe it might be just a little bit too much. You know, if you think, like, we, you know, when I do our Headspace camps, we have a camp that runs for 6th class children. And for most of those 6th class children, it's the first time that they've ever been away beyond maybe an overnight, you know, or maybe a couple of nights with family, you know, with extended family, like grandparents or whatever. They've certainly never been away on their own for 5 nights or 6 nights as it is with us. And it's a big deal for them, you know, and you know, I know we have to put in a lot of effort into just managing that first night, the homesickness, and, you know, and it's tricky for children. So I couldn't imagine in a big school tour that it's going to be easy, where you've got maybe, you know, 20 children all with the same level of anxiety and stress and distress, and you've got maybe a couple of teachers. Yeah. So I think maybe for this mam, you know, let this one pass.
Right, and you'll have
and think
to
maybe next year
negotiate that with your children as well, because one or other or both of them might want to go on that trip, so you might have a little bit of coaxing to do.
Yeah, and if they do, you know, and if they're up for the challenge of it, that's fine. But you probably also then want to just build in some kind of fail safes for yourself. You know, how far away are they going to be? Is it possible, you know, is there a kind of, you know, do the schools expect that there might be a couple of children who go home early because they just don't really like being away for so long? You know, will that be okay? You know, can you be available to come pick her up or him up, you know, if needs be? And, but yeah, I mean, absolutely be talking to your children. But I think, you know, we should never really underestimate our own gut feelings as parents. I think, you know, so many times, and I hear it again with people, you know, with even children's illnesses, even though, you know, none of us have the medical training, we just have this good instinct that it's more serious than Calpol is going to cope with, for example, and that we actually need to get in touch with a medical practitioner. So yeah, I would go with your gut.
this next one. My ex-partner and I separated a year and a half ago. We co-parent our seven-year-old daughter. She sees her father twice a week with no overnights. My ex-partner has met a new partner and is insisting on letting our daughter know about his new relationship. I don't agree with this because the child is still grieving the loss of her family unit. Have you any advice on the best way forward on this for our daughter, who is seven?
Yeah, so that is very difficult because, you know, the nature of separation, of course, means that, you know, one parent no longer has, you know, the capacity to really directly influence the other parent. And so the co-parenting has to be done with a lot of, usually with a lot of to and fro and a lot of, you know, giving way and trying to negotiate things as opposed to being able to say, look, I just don't agree. This isn't going to happen. And so, you know, it might be very difficult for her daughter if, you know, her ex-partner is going to introduce a new person. I think the key, though, is maybe just to be responsive to your daughter. And so if you know that this is going to happen, even though you don't agree with it, it's about checking in with your daughter about what this is like, because we do know that for children, you know, they can sometimes worry that this new person is going to replace them in terms of, you know, her sense of her dad. I don't know. We don't know whether it's the mum. Oh, it's her. She sees her father twice a week, wasn't it? You said. Yeah. So, you know, for this little girl, it might be that she fears that this new partner is going to take her dad away, that this new partner is going to replace her and her dad's affections. It may be that, she'll feel that there's no space for her in that little family unit when she goes to spend that time with her dad. I think it's okay for the dad to be moving on and to be starting a new relationship. And it's about him also then being sensitive to the fact that this could be just emotionally challenging for his daughter. And so maybe that's the conversation for the mum to be having, rather than saying, you know, you can't do this, which will set up a kind of a defensiveness and maybe a lot of conflict, is about saying, look, you know, I really don't agree. I don't think it's going to be helpful for, you know, if it's going to happen, though, here are the things for you to be aware of. And maybe, you know, the mum can do a little bit of research about just what we know are the kind of dynamics that can play out for children when their parent, you know, starts a new relationship with a new person. Mm-hmm. And so that at least, you know, hopefully will get him into that situation where he'll be just very sensitive and tuned into his daughter rather than focused on his new partner.
Yeah, cool, calm heads required and a lot of sensitivity. David, we'll leave it there for now, but thank you so much. And David will be back with us in a couple of weeks answering some more of your questions.